History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can download that anywhere you get favorite apps, Google Play Store, Apple App Store. Look for the big orange background with the white A, Odyssey. You downloaded it. You look for WILK News Radio. You favorite us, and that's it. You got us. You can also get us anywhere you find your favorite podcast. Just, again, favorite The Rob O'Donnell Show, and it'll be brought to your inbox each and every day. We put out between 3 and 5 podcasts each day. Well, it is Tuesday here, and like every Tuesday, we bring in Tuesdays with Tommy Marquez, a Navy veteran, a senior staffer in Congress for many years, and now he helps us give us information about our veteran systems out there. Tommy, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob. Sounds like you guys are going to have a beautiful weekend out there in Scranton.
Yeah, it's been not a bad. We're dealing with the fire and smog from Canada, but other than that, the weather has been good. So,
well, the Canadians haven't brought us anything good since Celine Dion, I'll tell you what.
There you go.
Hey, so before I get into some exciting good news for the VA, boy, there is just nothing in this world that isn't met with controversy, right? It seems like everyone's got an opinion, and I was going through the ship naming award contract for a new Navy destroyer going to be named after Marine Corporal Kyle Carpenter. First of all, I've actually gotten to meet, I've had the honor of meeting Corporal Carpenter. He's a Medal of Honor recipient. I was in awe of him, and actually was at the day after he went to the Padre game and threw a perfect strike for the first pitch. For those of you who don't know, he was controversial in the beginning because in 2010, he jumped on a grenade to shield the blast of that grenade from fellow Marines saving their lives. He underwent dozens and dozens of surgeries and lived. And initially, there was this belief that started a long time ago with George H.W. Bush, the Medal of Honor recipients must die in order to receive the Medal of Honor. They have to receive it posthumously. That was not the intention of the award. And I will give credit where credit is due. President Obama changed that rule, and it started with Kyle Carpenter. And there was a lot of people who were upset that Corporal Carpenter got it, thinking that the Medal of Honor should be for those who die. They don't understand the rules. There's been tons of living. Go back to Vietnam, World War II, Korea. There's been hundreds and hundreds of individuals who received the Medal of Honor, and they lived. There's just so many examples. It's hard to even, you know, pick a couple. We've seen movies on it, Hacksaw Ridge, a million different things, right? So that controversy started. Now, the people who are upset that Marine Corporal Kyle Carpenter is getting a ship named after him, and they're saying, well, he's a Marine, not a sailor, or has no Navy background. I hate to do this to remind everyone, because this is the dumbest argument. I don't even want to have it. But for those of you who don't know, the Marine Corps is a part of the Department of the Navy. And there's a longstanding tradition of ships being named after Marines. So the idea that a Navy ship shouldn't be named after a Marine is ridiculous. That might be the most ridiculous thing I've heard to date. Now, I know that there's been a lot of controversy lately about the Harvey Milk, as he was a Navy veteran. But let's be honest, the Harvey Milk was named after him because of his role as an activist. And him and Medgar Evers, and their activism is important, and human rights belong to all people, in my opinion. But I don't think that necessarily should have a ship being named after you. And there's been other controversies in naming ships. You know, there is a USS Winston Churchill a long time ago, and people were, you know, very upset that a U.S. warship was going to be named after a non-U.S. citizen. The actual only reason why Winston Churchill was able to pass and they allowed the ship to be named after him, his mother was American, and I believe he was made an honorary citizen in 1963, Winston Churchill. So he did have some American roots. So the idea that activists shouldn't get ships named after them, that's a long-standing tradition. The idea, though, that a Marine shouldn't get a Navy ship named after him, that is not long-standing tradition, and I want to separate those two things and explain to people that ships should be named, you know, according to customs and traditions, with Navy and Marine Corps personnel based on their military service. Activism, I'm not a big fan of that. I had written letters when I was working in Congress, and I'm happy to see also that the Travis Manion is going to be receiving a ship named after him. I helped with Rafael Peralta, a Marine who was a Mexican citizen that immigrated to the United States, and he received the Navy Cross, and he too jumped on a grenade to save his fellow Marines' lives, and he got a ship named after him. And I'd like to see more Marines and sailors of modern day heroics in the last two wars that we've had get ships named after them. And also, I'd love to see for ships to be named after battles like Fallujah, Ramadi, Tikrit, things that are related to the global war on terrorism.
Well, I've had a couple of admirals on this show that are petitioning day in and day out for a new USS Midway.
You know, I think the Midway is crucially important as a battle. I've been to the Midway, I'm not joking, 1,000 times in San Diego. I was on a ceremony there at least twice a month. That is not a joke. I could give the tours at a certain point, Rob. And I think there is a necessity for a ship named the Midway to be in the Navy at all times. But first, can we mix in a USS Fallujah, a USS Ramadi, and some of the other battles that we've had? I think those are noteworthy as well. And we should honor the veterans of this era by naming ships after them, too.
No doubt. And just in March 7th of 2020, there was a Marine Corps Chief Warrant Officer, Herschel Woodrow Williams. Woody, I happen to be friends with him and meet him several times. I honor the friendship that I had with him in the conversations. Yes. There was a U.S. Navy Expeditionary Sea Base named after him, the USS Herschel Woody Williams, ESB-4. And that was in March 7th of 2020. So there is that long. And he was the last surviving Medal of Honor recipient from the Battle of Iwo Jima. We have since lost him since then. You know, Woody passed away a few years ago. We were friends. I honor the friendship that I had with him and the conversations I had with him. I'm glad my daughter got a chance to meet him as well.
Yeah, that is a huge honor. I did not get to meet him. I met his family. That is amazing, Rob. But there's room for all those names, too. One of the biggest problems also, I'm leaving this out, and I got to be honest, this is part of the problem, too. We don't have a biggest fleet as we did previously, right? And we know now we need to increase our fleet. And in doing so, as long – there's definitely a room for it. You can't remove a USS Midway. I do believe that there's room for some of these other battles and these other service members from the global war on terrorism to include them into the mix, right? What I don't believe there's room for – is activists. There's too many great stories out there of individual sacrifice and battles to, you know, start putting on activists. Let's just be honest. There's other ways to honor them. There should be a statue to those individuals. Medgar Evers, I love his story. All those civil rights leaders, absolutely 100%, they should have their recognition. It's just not necessarily on a U.S. Navy warship, right? I'm also against a lot of members of Congress getting ships named after them. The Stennis, the Carl Vincennes, there's war heroes that should be named, get ships named after them first, in my opinion. That's me. Now, Rob, you and I, it's ironic, we sent this to each other, that the Navy, or the VA, I should say, excuse me, is changing the rules, and they're going to allow veterans to receive outside community care. And they're going to be able to keep their eligibility to receive continuous care for that specialty for 12 months. This is a huge update to the program for community care. And I thank you for sending it to me, Rob. And I appreciate that you put this out already and talked about it. I know you're going to put it on social media. A lot of individuals who don't know, they're out there struggling for VA care, for health care, and you're a veteran, go to the VA. The VA is improving their care dramatically. And now, you know, can you imagine if you got to see a cardiologist, you don't see a cardiologist once. You see a cardiologist about 5 to 6 times if you have any kind of problems. And can you imagine if you had to wait 60 to 90 days each time for a referral from your primary care physician to go see your cardiologist? I mean, that would be horrible. And that's one of the 30 conditions, Rob, that they are now allowing 1 year. Once you get approval, you have that for a year. So you can see the cardiologist as many times as it takes during that year to get care for it. It's just relieving so much burden on the veteran and cutting through so much red tape. But Rob, you know what I hate is these op-eds. These op-eds in the Military Times, the Task and Purpose op-eds, military.com, Stars and Stripes. The headline for one of them reads, VA to ease authorization rules for some outside care, raising concerns. And the article goes on to say that there's concerns that this is a step towards privatizing the VA totally, even though the Secretary of the VA has outlined several times, Rob, that is not the intent. The intent here is to provide community care access to veterans and ease some of the red tape. But why do these people not write op-eds, Rob, with the other standpoint, the other half of that? And that is, why are veterans having to go through so much red tape to get care, whether it's outside community care or in the VA? And they should be upset and worried that veterans were literally being wheeled out to die in the streets in Phoenix when that scandal happened because the VA was too full. There doesn't seem to be an emphasis on the veterans receiving care with the people who wrote that article. The emphasis is, how do we keep the VA bureaucracy going?
Well, it's the narrative. It's not the facts of what the care is actually on the ground. It's the narrative. That's what the care is. That's why you have these op-eds. That's why there's people paid to do these op-eds. That's why the media pushes these op-eds.
Absolutely. And I don't know who needs to hear this, but I'm going to say it. This country voted for President Trump, and he didn't just win the electoral colleges. He won the popular vote, and he lost a lot of Latino, African-American voters, women voters. Or he won those in much greater numbers than he had previously. And the reason why the Democrats lost those numbers, I'm going to give them this advice. Make the main thing if you ever want to win an election. You're concerned about bathrooms, transgender affirming care and teaching this to kids and all these crazy things. And jeans, not understanding the double entendre, jeans and jeans. They're worried about all these things, and everybody's a Nazi potentially. But the main purpose of the VA is to provide care for veterans. It is not to employ veterans. It is not. It is not. It is not to employ bureaucrats. It's not to give jobs. It's not a jobs program. The main purpose of the military is to impose our will against other nations if need be. Pax per potens, power through peace through power. That's the main thing. The VA, and under President Trump, under Secretary Collins, is getting back to the main thing, which is serving veterans and providing them quality health care and access to timely care. This article, this is ridiculous. All these people who are so caught up in this, Rob, it blows my mind. They're more concerned, well, hey, this might lead to all these things. Not one mention of the fact that veterans weren't getting the care that they deserve, veterans weren't getting the care that they needed, and veterans weren't getting care in a timely manner.
No, it's about pushing the bureaucracy. It's about pushing the bureaucracy, yeah. And that's what we know it is. Tommy, I got to leave it there. I'm running way behind on traffic and weather, but I appreciate you coming into this weekend.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate you.
All right, thank you. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WI.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
LK News Radio. There was an incident in Wilkes-Barre where there were shots fired during an argument. Again, police were dispatched to the 300 block of South Main Street around 2:30 a.m. to report of shots being fired. Witnesses reported seeing a group of women arguing with one another before hearing several shots being discharged. It appears that police found evidence that shots were indeed fired, but everyone was gone when they arrived. So it's just an evidence at this point, and an investigation is ongoing. I talked about the incident, you know, there was that shots fired where the individual put a gun to someone's cheek and then fired a few shots in the air on Saturday. And then I said Sunday night there was a major police response to what was reported as shots fired again. There was a little more information on that, and someone has been arrested, but it does appear shots were fired. Police arrested a Scranton man after he chased another vehicle down a street. Lazaro Batista, 19, is charged with simple assault, reckless endangerment, endangering another person, and disorderly conduct. At about 11 p.m., Scranton police officers were driving northbound on North Main Avenue, responding to a report of harassment on Mount Vernon Avenue. Officers spotted a black sedan southbound on North Main Avenue with flickering lights and sounding a horn. Police made a U-turn and pulled up alongside the sedan, which was stopped at a green light at the intersection. Officers spoke with the sedan driver, later identified that a white vehicle behind him was following him and shot at his vehicle. Officers then spoke to the driver of the white car, who denied having a firearm in the vehicle, gave officers permission to search the car. We talked about this yesterday. I said they possibly allowed a search, and they didn't find anything, which is why we didn't hear of any arrests for a firearm at that time. He told officers he was following the vehicle because the vehicle hit his car. He couldn't call 911 because it was broken. After an investigation, the driver of the black car that was following the white car that was following the black car was arrested for the following charges. So it appears that witnesses said that they hadn't seen any firearms or heard any gunshots. There were no firearms found in the car after a search. So the individual was arrested based on the complaint from the first driver, again, for that simple assault, reckless endangerment, and disorderly conduct. So that's a follow-up on the second incident in Scranton that was reported as possibly having a firearm involved, but turned out that no evidence of one was discovered. But an arrest was made. So great work again by Scranton Police and Wilkes-Barre for responding and gaining evidence on the shots fired there. It's 4:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice in law enforcement on this day, August 5th, throughout history and throughout the Commonwealth. We're going to start today with Trooper Francis Michael Testore, Pennsylvania State Police, 1960. Was struck and killed by a tractor-trailer while arresting a man he stopped for speeding in Chester County. Trooper Testore was standing behind the vehicle, preparing his report when the 17-year-old truck driver, who had been behind the wheel for 23 straight hours, fell asleep, ran off the road, and struck the trooper and the driver as he was arresting. Both were killed instantly. Lieutenant William J. Jack Lavery, Pittsburgh Bureau of Police, 1947, was electrocuted when he moved a 4,000-volt live wire in Roslyn Place. He had just safely moved the wire, but picked it up again in an attempt to show bystanders it was safe. He was electrocuted the second time he picked it up. Park Policeman Charles Hen Crownshield, Harrisburg Park Police Department, Pennsylvania, 1929, was killed in a motorcycle crash at the intersection of 5th Street and Harris Street. His motorcycle collided with a truck as both vehicles entered the intersection. He was transported to Harrisburg Polyclinic Hospital, where he succumbed to his injuries. And we have Police Officer James Miller, Philadelphia Police Department, in 1852. He died as a result of injuries suffered 3 weeks earlier while arresting a subject near 7th Street and Market Street. He'd arrested the subject for being intoxicated disorderly near the intersection of Chestnut Street and 6th Street while he was walking the prisoner to the police station. A few of the men's friends attempted to free him by interfering with the officer. The subject was able to gain control of Officer Miller's baton and struck him several times in the head, rendering him unconscious. The man attempted to escape but was taken into custody by citizens and turned over to the police. He was taken to the Pennsylvania Hospital, where he was discovered to have serious brain injury. He never fully regained consciousness and died as a result of those injuries 3 weeks later. And those are our four on this day, August 5th, in history and Commonwealth that made the ultimate sacrifice serving and protecting our great Commonwealth. It is coming up on 4:40 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Here's the Storm Tracker 16 forecast from Chief Meteorologist Kurt Aaron. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 60. Wednesday, partly cloudy with a chance of a spotty shower, slight chance, high of 82. Thursday, partly cloudy again with a chance, slight chance of spotty showers, high of 82. And the weekend, well, the weekend looks pretty good at this point. So something to look forward to as we look ahead into the week. It is currently 85 degrees. We do have that air quality alert outside thanks to our 51st state north of us in Canada. It is currently 85 degrees at 4:40 here at your official weather station, WILK. We're back with the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 4:45, 85 degrees outside. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? Well, let's see what we have on this day, August 5th, throughout history. 1963, the U.S., U.K., and the Soviet Union signed the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, one of the most important Cold War agreements. The Partial Test Ban Treaty prohibited nuclear tests in the atmosphere, outer space, and underwater. It was a critical step forward, slowing the arms race and reducing radioactive fallout worldwide. And that was 1963. 1858, first successful transatlantic telegraph cable was completed. The first message was sent from Queen Victoria to President James Buchanan. Shrinking communication time between North America and Europe from weeks to minutes. Though the cable failed after a few weeks, it marked a milestone in global connectivity. 1861, first income tax in U.S. history was enacted. 1861, right? To help fund the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Revenue Act, which included the first federal income tax, 3% on incomes over $800. It was temporary, but laid the groundwork for future tax systems. Taxes are never temporary. We know this. Come on. It took us a couple hundred years, but we know it now. Don't listen to them. 1957, American Bandstand goes national. Dick Clark's iconic music and dance show aired nationally for the first time from Philadelphia, became a defining force in American pop culture, helping launch the careers of numerous music legends. Some notable birthdays today. Let's see. 1930, Neil Armstrong, first person to walk on the moon during the Apollo 11 mission. Born in Ohio, Armstrong remains a symbol of American exploration and scientific achievement. John Huston, 1906, Oscar-winning filmmaker and screenwriter known for classics like The Maltese Falcon, The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Patrick Ewing, 1962, basketball Hall of Famer and Olympic gold medalist known for his career with the New York Knicks. I miss those days. Jordan versus Ewing at the Garden. Come on, Bulls versus Knicks. That was some good times there. It was the only time I ever watched basketball. August 5th today reflects America's role in shaping global diplomacy, technology, pop culture, and space exploration. From a Cold War treaties to moonwalkers and music shows the defined generations. So that's a little today in history. Jake, I did see that there is a 44% chance from the odds makers that Sadur Sanders gets cut from the Browns.
And I just saw a thing a couple minutes ago that says that they plan on starting him their preseason opener against Carolina. So
you think that's a test to see what they should do after that, or like kind of throw him in the fire?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of everything. Obviously, preseason. I mean, you definitely want to see. You have four quarterbacks on the roster. Can't really count Deshaun Watson as a fifth because everyone knows that he's pretty much lost for the season. But you also have Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, and Dillon Gabriel, who they also took in the NFL draft. And I know Kenny has a hamstring injury, so you just got to see. That's the thing. I mean, when you have injuries like that, especially at this point in the season, you can't really cut anybody just yet when you're lacking that depth. But just going to have to wait and see how this train wreck unfolds.
Yeah, and the odds, I think they're based on by the first regular season game. So it's not like they're cutting him soon, but what's your take? You believe it's all on this first start? Do you think, you know, maybe he'll get a second chance after that, but if he doesn't really prove himself?
I mean,
injuries are just so great they keep him.
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think he could definitely be on the week one roster when they play the Cincinnati Bengals. I think that is definitely a possibility. I think when you have four quarterbacks, I mean, you know, one of them is going to get released. One of them will probably just be demoted to the practice squad. So I think that there is a chance, me personally, I think that there is a chance he'll be on the roster week one. Beyond that, who knows? I mean, again, Cleveland definitely isn't the place to start your career when you're a quarterback, that's for sure. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think eventually, I mean, he's in Cleveland now. I think eventually he'll probably be traded. He'll probably get released one day. But I see that still a ways away from now. And then whatever happens from there just remains to be seen.
All right, so we'll see what happens. I just saw that little ditty before I started the show today, so I figured this was a good time to bring it up, you know, today in history, because we'll see if he's going to be history or not. But the odds, 44% chance was the latest as the show started. With him having the start now, we'll see.
Yeah, so it's Kenny Pickett and Dillon Gabriel. Those are the two that have injuries right now. I think, honestly, if I were Cleveland, I think personally – there is that chance that he'll start Friday against Carolina. But as far as week one, Cincinnati, I still see that being Joe Flacco to start the season off.
Well, we'll see. We'll let these few test games get out of the realm, and then we'll pin you down to what you think is going to happen as we move forward. Let me go to the phone now. We have Bob Bolus on William Gnost. Bob.
How are you, sir?
Good.
Today, in 17, the commissioners named today the fifth William Gnost Day. And who is Will Gnost? Sergeant Gnost was a Marine film photographer who filmed the iconic flag raising on Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima, which we see to this day. If you're sitting home and tonight a documentary goes on, you'll see the flag being raised. Picture Sergeant Gnost with his camera on his shoulder filming that. A few days later, he and two other Marines went into a spider hole on Iwo Jima and were killed by the Japanese that were in the cave. We blew the cave up, but never brought their bodies home. I've been to Iwo Jima three times. And it's my own personal mission to bring their remains home. And I intend to make one more mission there, and I believe I've located the cave, and I'm going to bring him back. But he's honored here in Scranton because of what I've been doing as a Scrantonian and a Lackawanna County resident. Was brought up all over the country that this is basically now home to Sergeant Gnost. And I intend to bring his remains home and the other two Marines. I brought it up the other day with the Marine Corps League, and I was hoping we could have did something today in his honor because the flag that I brought back from Iwo Jima and two there that's visible with the sands of Iwo Jima is at the Marine Corps League that I donated to them. And it was in honor of Sergeant Gnost. So I just wanted to bring that up today to anybody out there understanding what our veterans went through and those that didn't come home when they're standing on the street protesting. Remember the freedom you got to do that. These are the guys who gave their lives, and they gave it all.
Yeah, to expand the
veterans for what they did.
To expand on what happened that day, on the 4th of March, 1945, just 9 days after the flag-raising video, Gnost was helping Marines capture Hill 362A upon hearing what was believed to be a wounded Marine calling for help from a cave. Gnost and another Marine entered the cave. When Gnost turned on his flashlight, a Japanese hiding in the cave opened fire, killing the two Marines instantly. Other Marines fired into the cave with flamethrowers, but they were unable to get the bodies of the two Marines out before bulldozing the cave shut to prevent any Japanese from escaping.
Right, we never went back. But the real story is there was a Japanese soldier at a table, and we tried communicating with him, and he wouldn't communicate. Then he reached for his weapon, and our people shot him. The CO asked who has the flashlight, and Gnost said he did. The CO said, well, I'll take it. He said, no, I'll go. And he and the two other Marines went down into the cave, and that's when they were killed by the Japanese. It's all honeycombed all the way through Iwo Jima there. And they were in the caves going back and forth, and the Japanese were in their open fire and killed the three of them. And our people returned fire, hit it with the flamethrower, and then blew the cave. The war moved toward General Kurabayashi, who was at the northern end. When they came back, everything had changed because the German tanks that came ashore with the bulldozer blades and were scraping everything around 362, able to keep the Japanese from coming out of the caves, grabbing our people. And the rest is history. I've been there three times. I've been on 362, able. I've been at Mount Suribachi. I brought the flag home that we raise every year there, and that's at the Marine Corps League in a case. And it's donated by me in honor of Sergeant Gnost, along with the sands of Iwo Jima that are in a tube.
All right, Bob, I appreciate you bringing this up today and so we can remember William Gnost here.
I really appreciate it. Thank you. It's just a way for me and all of us to honor who our people in uniform really are.
Indeed. Staff Sergeant William Homer Gnost. So thanks for calling with that, Bob.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
It's 4:56 here at WILK. We'll be back. And we'll see you then.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.